Welcome to Stand in the Gap Today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler of the American Pastors Network, addressing the most critical issues impacting our culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Learn more about the work of the American Pastors Network at AmericanPastorsNetwork.net.
Well, good afternoon to each and every one of you, wherever you might be out there in Stand in the Gap Today territory. I'm Gary Dahl, and of course, along with Dave Kistler and Sam Rohr, we are here every day at this same time on this radio station to talk about the issues that relate to us, both from the biblical as well as from the constitutional perspective. And today we have a guest in our studio here, Tom Wallace. Tom is a fellow who has been involved with researching and teaching about Islam over the last number of years. And he's going to be with us today as we continue to talk about this very, very significant subject and religion of Islam and how it affects us here in the United States of America today. But before we get into that, we do want to remind you folks that right now, this very moment, 6 minutes past the hour of 12 Eastern time, is very, very significant to those of us in the United States of America, as the United States Supreme Court is hearing arguments in favor of same-sex marriage. Now, we're told that that is to be taking place between 11 o'clock and 1:30, and so many people across the nation are actually praying right now, even as I am speaking to you. And so I would encourage you to pray earnestly for our Supreme Court that they will not vote in favor of same-sex marriage. And just recently, in the past hour or less, David Kistler, you heard something encouraging that I think would be well to share with our audience here this afternoon.
Yeah, Gary, I'll try to do this very, very quickly. But technically, actually, I think the session, the hearing, the oral arguments began a little earlier, Gary, I think around 10 o'clock, because the information I received came out just a little bit ago, and it would indicate that actually the session may be over at present. In other words, the oral arguments have already been presented, and it's over and done. But what was so interesting is this. Anthony Kennedy, Justice Kennedy, who is considered the swing vote in this decision on same-sex marriage, made some very intriguing statements. And the statement that he made that really grabbed my attention and that was passed on to me by those that were sitting in the room, what he said was this. He said, marriage has been defined for millennia as being between one man and one woman, and who are we, and is it really the right of this court, this Supreme Court, to attempt to redefine what has been defined for millennia as between one man and one woman? Now, let me just be very, very quick to say this. You never want to read too much into this because of the way the oral arguments are presented and the way the justices ask questions and make comments. They are thoroughly familiar with this case because of legal briefs that have been presented to them well ahead of today's oral arguments. So they know both sides of the issue. So sometimes you can read tea leaves, so to speak, and you can take from a statement like Justice Kennedy's something of great import. Sometimes it is not that important. But I will say this, I am guardedly and very hopefully optimistic that what he said there is going to be reflective of the fact that he may be leaning toward issuing his decision in a way that would be favorable to traditional marriage. Again, we've got a lot to pray about. I also heard this, Gary, and I do need to say this quickly. The vote that will be held among the nine justices will take place on Friday. There will be a brief lunch that they will share together, and then on Friday following that lunch, they will go into a room where only the nine justices are allowed. No one else is in the room. And then they will have the vote, and the decision will be made. We will not know that decision until probably first or second week of June when it's announced publicly, but the decision will be made by Friday.
Well, it will. And ladies and gentlemen, as we've been emphasizing, this is a very, very crucial time in America's history. I would encourage you, truly, those of you who love the Lord Jesus Christ, those of you who love the Word of God, those of you who stand on the authority of God's Word, I would strongly, strongly encourage you to be spending time in prayer between now and Friday, that God will be honored, God will be exalted, God will be glorified in what takes place down there at our Supreme Court. Because, Sam, if indeed the Supreme Court justices would say yay to the idea of same-sex marriage, That is going to change the course of this nation in so many, many ways until it would be reversed. And, of course, we know with the Roe versus Wade situation, you know, that may take a long time, if ever.
Well, Gary, it is significant. If it does, if they do rule against the states effectively, what has happened in the states in the form of amendments and legislation statute there, and ultimately then against the biblical definition of marriage, it is something that will not be turned around soon. The ramifications are enormous, as we've talked about other times on this broadcast, even to the point of not really being able to even sit at this point and speculate at the kinds of things that could and would happen, as giving an opportunity for the opponents of marriage to raise threats of suit or that kind of thing, ranging from pastors to business owners to a whole range of things. So it's significant, and as you said, we really must take this up as a matter of prayer. God can move. If God, as we know, God raises up and puts down people, He can certainly, as the Scripture says, He moves the heart of kings. And like rivers of water, He moves it whithersoever He will. This is a matter of the heart of these justices, and we would pray that they would be responsive to eternal truth, not the whims of the winds of change that we see in this culture today.
Tom Wallace, we were talking about this whole idea of same-sex marriage, and yesterday to a great degree, and you brought out yesterday, or we brought out yesterday, and you wanted to clarify again today, the difference between an event and an ongoing situation that affects some of these bakeries and other businesses who may be in trouble for, as it were, not catering to those who are the same-sex marriage philosophy.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, the florist Stutzman in Washington State, who's being prosecuted by the Attorney General of that state for discriminating against these Muslims for refusing to provide flowers for their wedding. She served this client many, many years. And she hugged the guy saying, "I'm sorry, I can't do this for you. It's against my Christian faith." But it's not because she's discriminating against him. She's discriminating against an event. An event, marriage, is a holy institution. It is a biblical, scriptural institution. And it's being desecrated by this law, and she can't participate in that. And so it's not a discrimination against a person. It's a discrimination against an event. And we need to be careful about the language and don't let them hijack the language. We need to control that and make sure that people understand what we're talking about.
Well, that's a good point. And you know, down through the years when working with various subjects and various issues where we find the government is coming against the church, we've always been told that we must be the one to make the definitions and make those definitions clear, correct?
That's right. That's right. You know, I mean, if we don't, they will.
And once they do it, then, of course, it's going to be operating according to their ways.
Yeah. And their agenda takes over.
And we don't like that at all. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to talk a little bit more today about the concept of Islam. We've dealt with that quite a bit in the past. But we want to talk a little bit more about it today because Tom Wallace is indeed an authority on Islam. So you won't want to go away. Stay tuned. We will be back with more right after this on Stand in the Gap Today.
Deer might be fun to look at, but they can rub the bark off your trees overnight, creating thousands of dollars in damage. Ordinary tree wraps or stormwater pipe can't stand up to deer when they're rutting or in heat. Hi, I'm Jim Saunders, the creator of Tree Armor, the world's first and only spring-loaded tree guard. Tree Armor stands up to any buck, protecting young trees up to 4 inches thick from deer rubbing, as well as power tools. It's infused with a natural cayenne pepper scent that repels deer before they can do damage to your trees. It's brown and almost invisible from a short distance, and Tree Armor is the only tree guard made in America, using only EPA-approved vinyl, free of lead and heavy metals found in other imported products. Tree Armor is not available in stores, but you can buy it from the manufacturer at a huge discount. Go to our website, mytreearmor.com, and buy as many as you need from about $3 each. We even pay the postage. That's mytreearmor.com to protect your trees.
Hey, Grandma, can you help me with my Common Core lesson on the Constitution? But the only part we're reading in 8th grade is the preamble and the First Amendment. I wonder when we'll get to study the rest of it. Didn't you say our founding fathers were wise patriots and wrote the Constitution and the Bill of Rights to protect our freedom? This Common Core book we're reading says our founding fathers were racist and they didn't think women or blacks should ever be allowed to vote. She says, we the people, didn't really mean you and me, but some rich white guys. That just makes me feel terrible about our country. We need to change things.
Oh, honey, that's not true at all. Our country is the greatest country the world has ever seen, and our founding fathers worked hard to be fair to everyone. I'm going to call our school board and our state board of education and ask why they allow Common Core and this book in your school.
Call your representatives now and ask them to stop Common Core and restore local control. Pennsylvanians Against Common Core brought you this message. Go to nopacommoncore.com or call 484-678-2236.
As stated by Edmund Burke, the only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing.
Without God, liberty will not last, a quote from Thomas Jefferson. In 1778, George Washington said in Valley Forge, "If having pleased the almighty ruler of the universe to defend the cause of the United States, and finally to raise up a powerful friend among the princes of the earth, to establish our liberty and dependence upon a lasting foundation, it becomes us to set apart a day of gratefully acknowledging the divine goodness and celebrating the important event which we owe to his divine interposition."
The 2015 Commonwealth Prayer Breakfast will be held Tuesday, May 5th from 7 to 9 a.m. at the Radisson Penn Harris Hotel, 1150 Camp Hill Bypass in Camp Hill, Pennsylvania. This year's breakfast theme is God Answers Our Prayers, and the featured speaker is Philip A. Clemens, Chairman of the Clemens Family Corporation and CEO of Hatfield Quality Meats. Mr. Clemens will share why God answers our prayers and how this has personally impacted his life journey. Cost for the breakfast is $25 per person, or $300 to sponsor a table of eight. Consider taking the time to join others in prayer on Tuesday, May 5th at this 2015 Commonwealth Prayer Breakfast. To reserve your spot by the April 30th deadline, or for event questions, contact Stephanie at 814-931-7841. That's 814-931-7841. 814-931-7841.
If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and I will forgive their sin and heal their land. 2 Chronicles 7:14. WFYL reminds you to pray for America.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and walk through the resource library to find over 500 separate resources with more added every week. Our resource library is a collection of biblical worldview resources categorized according to selected topics like abortion, marriage, the Constitution, evolution and creation, and much more. The resource library is free to use and designed for pastors or anyone who wants to find the very best materials available to more effectively relate biblical truth on a full range of issues facing the culture. Again, visit the website today, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and find out how you can help reverse cultural decline, equipped with the best resources available. And now, let's rejoin the American Pastors Network and stand in the gap today.
Well, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. On behalf of Dave Kistler and Sam Rohr, I'm Gary Dahl, and we have a guest in the studio again today. We had him yesterday. He is Tom Wallace, and Tom happens to be with us here in the Altoona, Pennsylvania area for the Central Pennsylvania Bible Conference, and he's been talking about Israel, ISIS, and the Middle East, and has been doing a great, great, great job in giving us all sorts of good information about Israel, ISIS, and the Middle East. And Tom, one of the things that you've been stressing in the conference here in Altoona is the history of Islam. And, you know, it's interesting how it came together and how young it is as religions of the world really go. And it could be that some of our listeners are really not up on that. And I think it's significant for them to understand the history of Islam. So if you could share that with us a little bit today, I'd appreciate it.
All right. Well, I'll try. It's kind of a Johnny-come-lately religion. It's only 1,400 years old. It started 600 years after Christ. And so before the Prophet Muhammad, there was no Islam. I mean, it's a brand new religion with Muhammad. You need to understand about Muhammad. He is of the seed of Ishmael. So that makes him a half-brother to the Jewish nation. Of course, Isaac and Ishmael, both sons of Abraham. And the concept of Islam in their thinking about their religion, according to the teachings of Muhammad, is that, you know, it kind of all goes back to Abraham. You see, God, or their God, Allah, made a covenant with Abraham, and he gave his testament to the Jewish nation. So the Old Testament was given, but the Jews corrupted it. And so God, Allah, had to go find a new prophet, and Jesus comes along, and he gives him the new revelation. But his followers messed that up. So now the Old Testament is corrupted, the New Testament is corrupted, the message. And so Allah had to clear it up with the last testament, the last prophet, Muhammad, in the 600s. And so they believe their Quran, their holy book of scripture, is the last testament. It corrects all the errors and mistakes that the Jews and Christians made to the original message that Allah had given his prophets. So they do accept some teachings out of our Bible, as long as it is in agreement with their Quran. And so, you know, but you can tell what a person taught and what a person believes by their actions. You know, you shall know them by their fruits. And Islam has a 1,400 year of conquest with the sword. Why? Because that's exactly what Muhammad taught and preached. I kind of, you know, you got to separate some of these things. You got to separate Islam from the people.
Mm-hmm.
And when you deal with Islam, you have to separate it from the religious side and from its a governmental side, its Sharia, its law.
Mm-hmm.
And because Muhammad was not just starting a religion. He was building a kingdom. He was building an empire. And so the laws of God not just deal with how you worship and, you know, the ecclesiology, but it also deals with your government, what kind of government you're going to have, political system you're going to have, what kind of education system you're going to have, army. It covers everything. For goodness sake, the Sharia even tells you how to go to the bathroom.
Wow.
<It's> so,
that's specific.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. But it's a religion that dominates. I say this of Islam. It is an equal opportunity destroyer.
Mm.
It not only victimizes those that are without it, but it also victimizes those that are within.
Mm-hmm.
Islam is a religion of death. There is reward in death within Islam. And so it compels Muslims to move towards that type of goal. And I don't know if we got the time to get into the seven blessings of the Shaheed, because this is a crucial teaching of Islam. There are seven blessings. The only way a Muslim can guarantee for themselves salvation, the only way, is to die as a Shaheed, die as a martyr. And there are seven blessings. And by the way, you won't find this in the Quran. You find this in the Sunnah.
Mm-hmm.
Most Americans have never heard of the Sunnah. But the Sunnah is where over 80% of their scriptural doctrines come from. The Sunnah are the words of the Prophet Muhammad. The Quran are the words of their God, Allah.
Mm-hmm.
So in the Sunnah, we have the blessings of the Shaheed, seven of them. Number one, in the moment that you die, the moment that your blood is spilled, you will be forgiven. You'll be spared the day of judgment. You'll get these rewards in heaven, a home, and all this stuff. But the sixth blessing, you'll be married to 72 Al-Huralins.
Mm-hmm.
These are the virgins. Again, you won't find it in the Quran, but it's in the Sunnah. And so we've heard about them, okay? There's a lot I could say.
You hear a lot about that.
Yeah, we do. And but the seventh blessing is hardly ever talked about. The seventh blessing is that they'll be able to plead for 70 of their family members. In other words, 70 of their family will be saved because of their death. A shaheed is one who dies performing jihad.
Right.
And so, so this is why, and it goes on, trust me. Palestinian women, mothers, will say to their little child, Ahmed, today you're just 5 years old, but one day you'll grow up to honor your family and honor our God Allah. You'll be able to one to bring salvation to our home. You'll be able to die and have victory and honor for Allah, and then bring salvation to the rest of your family. And children in Palestine are being raised with mothers telling them this every day, and they are victimizing the Jew. You'll be able to kill God's enemy, the pigs, the Jews, and so on, the kuffar. And so, you know, this is being drilled into them, and they want death because there's reward.
You know, yesterday when you were speaking at the conference here in Altoona, Pennsylvania, you made the statement that there could be some confusion between virgins and raisins.
Okay, yeah. I was debating a Muslim, and he told me, he said, well, you know, the word, the Arabic word for al-hurailin could be translated as raisin. So I kind of looked at him. I looked at him and said, are you serious? So I'm – okay, now imagine I'm a Muslim, and I'm going to die. I'm going to give up my life so I can get to go to heaven and have 72 raisins. Are you serious? And then in the other passages of the Sunnah, the sexual things I'm going to do with those raisins.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, are you, and he said, let's move on.
Amazing. I would guess he would. I would guess that he would. Interesting what a word means, isn't it? You know, Islam is growing so rapidly. In fact, I've heard people say it's the number one growing religion of the world, or it's becoming the number one growing religion of the world. Why is Islam growing so much, Brother Tom?
Well, largely it's through procreation. Now, they are certainly evangelizing. It's called Dawah. They are converting people. In Britain alone, 100,000 white British people have now converted to Islam. Now, this is probably about 5-6 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Oddly enough, most of them were women.
Hmm.
Isn't that interesting?
Interesting.
Now, they're being swayed and wooed by these Muslim men that are they're charming them, and they get their marriage, they get their visa, and then the girls realize, man, they're in trouble now. But anyhow, mm-hmm. but most of it's through procreation. The average non-Muslim family will have in the West will have 1.3, 1.4 children. Europe, and also here in the United States. The average Muslim family will have almost 5 children. Now, that's per wife, though.
Wow,
per wife. And I know many Muslim families who have 2 wives. And, of course, they can't afford that. So guess who gets to pay that?
Mm.
The taxpayer.
Sure.
They live on the dole, and they're laughing in their hats at us. I know in Dearborn, Michigan, I know Muslim families, men who have 2 wives, and they're laughing at us because, you know, they can't believe it. We're paying for them to grow the Ummah,
mm-hmm.
The nation of Islam. And you know, it's just – and they know they're going to either one day outvote us in the voting box or outnumber us on the battlefield. And Europe is in trouble because they've allowed so many Muslims to come in after World War II. Their country was all of Europe was decimated with the carpet bombing, so they had to rebuild. But they didn't have the men to do it because they were killed off in the war. So – France, Spain brought in immigrants from North Africa, Muslim. Germany brought them in from Turkey, Muslim. England brought them in from the old colonies of Asia, India, Pakistan, Bangladesh. For seven decades now, Muslims have been pouring in,
mm-hmm.
and they're also procreating. Mm-hmm. And so after World War I, 1918, estimated 300 million Muslims in the world. Today, 1.7 billion. That
Amazing.
Is 1 in 4 people. 1 in 4 people are now Muslim. In 100 years, they've grown that much.
And in some parts of Europe, I mean, they really are just taking over. Of course, there are places within Great Britain that Sharia law is even being practiced, correct?
Well, it's part of the legal code. September 14, 2008 was a day that should go down in infamy in British history. They voted then to open up Sharia law courts with the government backing. So they've had courts, tribunals working. But it was all voluntary. Now, whatever the imams pass, the government has to enforce on these Muslims. So now what they've said is that our country is we are sovereign. Our laws apply to everyone except Muslims. Wow, what a problem.
What a problem. Ladies and gentlemen, we need to know as much about Islam as we possibly can. And after the break, we're going to continue to talk about this, talking about what the worldview of Islam is, how is Islam making an impact in the government in the United States of America? And Dave Kistler, Sam Rohr, Tom Wallace, and I will continue to talk about these crucial issues. So we'll take a little bit of break, and then we'll be back with more Stand in the Gap Today right after these messages. Don't go away.
These are the times that try men's souls. The summer soldier and the sunshine patriot will, in this crisis, shrink from the service of their country. But he that stands it now deserves the love and thanks of man and woman. Tyranny, like hell, is not easily conquered. Yet we have this consolation with us, that the harder the conflict, the more glorious the triumph. Thomas Paine, The American Crisis, 1776.
This is a Fox News alert. I'm Chris Foster. Gay marriage and the Supreme Court. It's a big day with justices hearing arguments on whether states should have to allow and recognize same-sex marriage. That's the Gay Men's Chorus of Washington, D.C. There are plenty of voices against their cause outside the court as well.
If you support homosexual marriage, you are justifying the wicked.
The court's decision's expected in late June. In Baltimore, where Maryland Governor Larry Hogan has declared a state of emergency and sent the National Guard in to help deal with riots.
We've got a couple of thousand new police officers and guard on the street currently, and it's going to continue to grow. We'll put as many as we need.
He says police were overwhelmed and that he repeatedly offered help to Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake before she finally accepted. This is a Fox News alert.
All right. I know this isn't any fun to talk about, but we should. So, who's going to do what? Flashlights?
Nowhere to be found.
Where to be found? Batteries?
Dead.
Great. Emergency supply kits?
Not packed.
No. What about blankets?
We have an old towel.
Good enough. Cell phones?
May not work.
Emergency water?
Not a drop.
And what about food?
Nope.
Perfect. We all know where we're meeting if we're separated, yeah?
The library!
Aunt Joan's house.
The bus stop.
Great. And I'll be waiting here wondering where you all are. Sounds like we don't have a plan. Who's up for mini golf?
Winging it is not an emergency plan. Make sure your kids know what to do during an emergency. Who to call, where to meet, what to pack. Visit ready.gov/kids for tips and information. A public service announcement brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Working for your liberty right here in Philadelphia. Broadcasting freedom shining light throughout the tri-state area. Singing freedom shining light from Philly to the nations. 1180 shining forth, we are the Freedom Station. WFYN.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and walk through the resource library to find over 500 separate resources with more added every week. Our resource library is a collection of biblical worldview resources categorized according to selected topics like abortion, marriage, the Constitution, evolution and creation, and much more. The resource library is free to use and designed for pastors or anyone who wants to find the very best materials available to more effectively relate biblical truth on a full range of issues facing the culture. Again, visit the website today, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and find out how you can help reverse cultural decline, equipped with the best resources available. And now, let's rejoin the American Pastors Network and stand in the gap today.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for being there, and welcome back to Stand in the Gap Today. Sam Rohr, I want to go to you with this next question. Of course, we know that Tom Wallace is our authority, but you have studied Islam quite a bit as well. And we realize that, Islam has a completely different worldview than what we as Christians have. And I'm wondering if you might be willing to share with our people what the basic worldview of Islam is.
Well, Gary, the basic worldview would differ. Let's put it this way. It would differ from what we would hold to as a biblical worldview, in that the view of who God is different. Their God is Allah. Biblical worldview is Jehovah God, a creator God. The definition of justice is totally different in the view of Islam, as compared to the definition of justice, which is truth balanced with mercy and equity, as we would understand it to be biblically. It's totally different. Mercy is something that's pretty vacuous if you put that perspective from the view of Islam. The purpose for law and the application of that law system is strikingly different from the standpoint that of Sharia, as an example, is totally opposite as they would view the purpose of law from what would be what we would term for most people to say that would be Western law, where which is why the Islamic view does not permit a view of coexistence. It's either our way or that's why they're seeking to kill and destroy Israel and Christianity, because they cannot coexist. So those are just a few. I know that Tom could go into far more detail even than that, but I know from my legislative background, I bear down on that view of God, the role of government, the purpose and the functioning of the home as we would do it, the authority structure of the home, the purpose of what parents are supposed to do, children are supposed to do, what government's role is to be relative to the family and then the church. These things are significantly different.
Well, they are indeed, and of course, you know, we need to understand that as not only as Americans, but as Christians. And Dave, I know one of the things that you've studied quite a bit and that you are up on a lot is the impact that Islam is making into our government in America today. I'm wondering if you could explain that to our listeners this afternoon.
Well, Gary, you know, where do we start on that? It's an amazing thing, the inroads that Islam has made into our government. We have at least two gentlemen serving in the United States House of Representatives that are Muslim. One of those gentlemen is a gentleman named Andre Carson from Indiana, and then you have Keith Ellison from Minnesota. And one of those two men, when they were sworn in, placed their hand not on a Bible but on a Quran. Most recently, Gary, and this is just one additional example of many that could be given, our former Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, who is a 2016 presidential candidate, was seen at a Chipotle restaurant trying to go in incognito wearing glasses. To her immediate right at the counter, either having already placed an order or preparing to place an order, was Hillary's former closest advisor when she was Secretary of State. It's a lady named Uma Abedin. She is the wife of the disgraced New York Congressman Anthony Weiner. And for all the time Hillary was in the State Department, Ms. Abedin was her closest advisor. Ms. Abedin is Muslim Brotherhood from Egypt. And yet she is still being paid to be Hillary's advisor, taxpayer monies, to be Hillary's advisor when Mrs. Clinton is no longer at the State Department. And yet this woman is Muslim Brotherhood. The State Department is riddled through. The last time I counted, Tom may be able to correct me here, but I think it was at least 22, 23 individuals, if not more, within the United States State Department are full Muslim Brotherhood sympathetic individuals. And so, Gary, a Trojan horse has entered the United States of America in the form of Islam right into the very internal workings of our government.
What can we do to stop that? I mean, you know, that's very, very serious, because we realize that whenever you've got Islam with a completely different worldview than what the United States of America is founded upon, that is very, very risky. Now, you know, it's interesting as it relates to this issue that we're dealing with the Supreme Court today on same-sex marriage. I would think that the Islam would take a different view on homosexual than maybe our Supreme Court would. Tom, you were talking about that before we went on the air.
Yeah, you know, the Muslim faith would be less gracious.
Yeah.
You know, in Christianity, you know, we consider it an abomination. We would outlaw it. But, you know, we don't judge by stoning and stuff like that. We reserve that judgment with God. In Islam, the only debate that would be in Islam is how they kill a Muslim. That's the only debate. Some view that it ought to be by stoning. Some view it ought to be by throwing them off a cliff. And some do both. just to be sure, yes,
yeah,
that they've covered the law correctly. That's the only debate within Islam in how you deal with homosexuality.
So, you know, that's just an interesting observation. But, Dave, getting back to what we were talking about, how can we stop this intrusion of Islam in the government today?
Well, Gary, obviously we're going to have leaders in the House, in the Senate, and certainly a president in the White House that understands the threat posed by the religion slash ideology of Islam. And by the way, America's war on Islam is not a new war. It goes all the way back to the Barbary Pirates, and Thomas Jefferson issued a very solemn and serious warning about the threat that Islam posed to the United States, even in those early days. But Gary, I believe to answer your question, ultimately, it's going to take pastors standing in the pulpit, educating their people on what Islam teaches, what Islam's worldview is, what I believe is a literally a prophetic component to Islam. It's going to take bringing men in like Tom Wallace, who really is one of the most foremost authorities on the topic of Islam that is out there in the United States of America. Tom, I apologize if your calendar fills up after we make this announcement encouraging people to have you, but really, pastors need to have men like Tom in to speak on the topic so their people can be well-educated in what Islam believes, and only when we understand the threat it poses because of what it believes can it be appropriately and systematically stopped.
Well, I've got to admit, along with you, Dave Kistler, that Tom Wallace is exceptional, and he's been giving some great messages here at the Central Pennsylvania Bible Conference. The last two nights we've had to put seats out in the auditorium, chairs out of the auditorium, extra chairs, and he has a real message. And so if you are a pastor out there and you want to teach your congregation more about Islam and Middle East and ISIS and all of that, I would encourage you to get in contact with Tom Wallace. Tom, we're going to give you a commercial here.
Oh, wow.
How can they get in touch with you, by the way? This is a good time to give it.
Well, thank you for your kind words, fellas. Well, our website is fortressoffaith.com, fortressoffaith.com. Our contact details are there. And we've written probably over 1,200 articles dealing with Islam. Every broadcast that we do, we're on national radio there, 240-50 stations now. And for every broadcast we put out, we write an article to back it up, and we quote our sources. And so, yeah, fortressoffaith.com.
And so you folks can go right there right now and get all the information they need, contact information. Sam, I want to defer to you here in just a moment, and we'll see how much time or how much you can get in the time that we have left here. And it's a simple question, a very, very simple question, but you may want to elaborate upon it a little bit. Is it possible that Islam is the religion of the last days? You know, we read about that in the book of the Revelation. We've been talking about that. Preachers have been talking about that for years. Is it possible that Islam is the religion of the last days?
Gary, I think that it absolutely can be, and I'll say that for a couple of reasons. Number one, the Antichrist, who the Scripture talks about, is the one who comes, the devil, who comes, and he is his opposition directly against Jesus Christ, will be Antichrist. He'll be anti-Bible, he'll be anti-God's people. He'll be anti-everything that God is. And of course, Islam, as we're increasingly seeing, is every bit of that. It is anti-Jehovah God of the Bible. It is anti-absolutely Jesus Christ. It is certainly anti-Israel and God's people, and it's certainly anti-Christian, and by the fact of all that they're seeking to do. So the answer is, could it be? Actually, more than probably any religion that we see in the world, because ultimately the Antichrist is going to seek to be, you know, the individual to whom the whole world, he wants to bow down and worship him. It's going to be based in an ideology. It's going to be based in a form of worship, but it'll be denying the power of Jesus Christ. And therefore, does that sound like Islam? It sounds more like Islam, unfortunately, than perhaps anything that we have known, and therefore the answer to that question is yes, I believe it could be.
It's interesting. I just read in our local newspaper on Saturday that there is a large church out of the Midwest. They purchased something like 75 acres, and what they want to do with those 75 acres is make it a center of worship for Islam, Christianity, and Judaism.
Wow.
Isn't that sad?
Well, we've been seeing this coming, part of Chrislam, part of the end religions coming together.
Pretty sad stuff. Ladies and gentlemen, when we come back, we're going to talk a bit more about Islam, ISIS, and the Middle East. So don't go away. On behalf of the American Pastors Network, I'm Gary Dull.
Deer might be fun to look at, but they can rub the bark off your trees overnight, creating thousands of dollars in damage. Ordinary tree wraps or stormwater pipe can't stand up to deer when they're rutting or in heat. Hi, I'm Jim Saunders, the creator of Tree Armor, the world's first and only spring-loaded tree guard. Tree Armor stands up to any buck, protecting young trees up to 4 inches thick from deer rubbing as well as power tools. It's infused with a natural cayenne pepper scent that repels deer before they can do damage to your trees. It's brown and almost invisible from a short distance, and Tree Armor is the only tree guard made in America using only EPA-approved vinyl, free of lead and heavy metals found in other imported products. Tree Armor is not available in stores, but you can buy it from the manufacturer at a huge discount. Go to our website, mytreearmor.com, and buy as many as you need from about $3 each. We even pay the postage. That's mytreearmor.com to protect your trees.
History was made on today's date. Stay tuned for an American Minute with Bill Federer.
Leading the charge at the Battle of Trenton, a musket ball struck his shoulder, hitting an artery. He recovered and continued to fight for General Washington, becoming friends with Lafayette. After the Revolution, he studied law under Thomas Jefferson, was elected senator, governor of Virginia, and secretary of state. He negotiated the Louisiana Purchase and set the Monroe Doctrine. Who was he? James Monroe, 5th U.S. president, born this day, April 28, 1758. James Monroe stated, "It is our duty to unite in grateful acknowledgments to that omnipotent being in unceasing prayer that he will endow us with virtue."
This has been an American Minute with Bill Federer. For a free transcript, call American Minute at 1-888-USA-WORD.
With God's hand upon him, Nehemiah pursued the impossible. Rebuild broken walls, repair burned gates, restore a lost national identity. But Nehemiah had what few leaders have, a vision bigger than himself and a faith in God that wouldn't waver. Hello, I'm Sam Rohr, president of the Pennsylvania Pastors Network. At PPN, we encourage pastors to set their vision high, focus on God's calling and God's equipping, and boldly lead their people forward. Whether opposed by people, circumstances, or discouragement, Nehemiah did what godly leaders do. He went to his knees in prayer. He repented for his sins and the sins of the people. He beseeched God to hear the prayer of his servants who feared his name. Then he encouraged the people to work. Despite the opposition, the walls were rebuilt, gates repaired, identity found, and the worship of God restored. You can do the same. I'm Sam Rohr, president of the Pennsylvania Pastors Network.
Sign up as a partner and learn more about us at papastors.net.
Join me, Carla Dedessi, here every Friday from 8 until 9 for Your Family Matters. This is going to be an epic year, 2015, for Your Family Matters. We are going to continue to protect your family, your faith, while we are having fun. We're going to bring cutting-edge news to you, the current events, current resources and tools that are going to give you the best family ever. So strap on your seatbelt and join me for this wild ride in 2015 on Your Family Matters every Friday morning. Don't miss us.
Freedom is not a gift bestowed upon us by other men, but a right that belongs to us by the laws of God and nature. A quote from Benjamin Franklin.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and walk through the resource library to find over 500 separate resources with more added every week. Our resource library is a collection of biblical worldview resources categorized according to selected topics like abortion, marriage, the Constitution, evolution and creation, and much more. The resource library is free to use and designed for pastors or anyone who wants to find the very best materials available to more effectively relate biblical truth on a full range of issues facing the culture. Again, visit the website today, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and find out how you can help reverse cultural decline, equipped with the best resources available. And now, let's rejoin the American Pastors Network and stand in the gap today.
You know, Tom Wallace, when we read the Quran and when we read the Sharia, it gets very, very specific as to how the Muslims are to live, even right down to day-by-day living, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. As I said earlier, it even tells Muslims how to go to the bathroom, for goodness sake. You know, I mean, we don't want to go into that details, but it's just, you know, but the point here is this. Islam is controlling. Islam means surrender, submission, and that's why it battles with America, because America's, if you boil America's, our system, who we are, into one word, it would be freedom, liberty. Mm-hmm. And that's why Islam must destroy America, because we are the bastion of liberty to the world. And so, Islam is controlling. That's why it only has a supreme leader. One man determines, how you're to be governed, who you're going to worship, and it's all, inclusive there. It controls every part of your life.
Wow. Listen, as we wrap this discussion up here this afternoon, of course, you are involved with the conference this week, Central Pennsylvania Bible Conference in the Altoona, Central Pennsylvania area. And we've been talking a lot about Islam, ISIS in the Middle East, what's going on over there. It's just, it's interesting. It's exciting because I think it shows us that we are in the last days, but it's also very serious. So in this last segment, Tom Wallace, if you could, just give us a summary as to what's going on in these three entities and how we should be concerned as Americans and as Christians in America.
Well, I believe Sam was right in saying that Islam could be the religion of the last days. In Islam, they have teachings of eschatology. They are looking for future events. It may surprise Christians and Americans to learn that even Muslims are waiting for Jesus to return. Okay? In fact, there's three characters in Islam's eschatology. First, there's the Mahdi. He is their Messiah. Then there'll be a person called the Dajjal. The Dajjal is the Antichrist. See, they're waiting for someone to come who will pretend to be the Messiah as well. You know, it's kind of similar to our New Testament, our book of Revelation. But there's also a third person they're waiting for, and that is Jesus. They call him Isa. The Arabic name is Isa. But Isa will not be the Mahdi. He'll not be the Messiah. He serves the Mahdi. He, organizes the worship and the rule. And so, these three people, it's interesting. The book of Revelation also speaks of three major figures. And so when you look at Islamic eschatology, it is like looking at the book of Revelation in reverse. You're reading it from the other team's perspective. Now, what have we seen going on in the world today? The Islamic State has been, has been birthed again. We've not had a caliphate for over 100 years. And now the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria. Let me explain something here. People need to understand why President Obama says ISIL and not ISIS. ISIS, the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria. Now, the actual Arabic words is Daesh, when you use their acronym. But when we come to English, ISIS. But President Obama and his cronies all say ISIL. The reason he does it, because it's an insult on Israel. It is a purposeful insult on Israel. Many years ago, that region of the Middle East is called the Levant. It's a Latin word, means the rising or the east. The Europeans, speaking Latin, would look to the east of the Mediterranean where the sun would rise. And so that region of land was called the Levant. Before Israel was a state, before Israel had its borders, that area was referred to as Levant. So he's now using an archaic word. And so in essence, he's removing Israel from their rights to their statehood and rights to their borders, and he's lumping them in to the Islamic State. It's an insult, and he knows it. That's why he uses it. But other things we're seeing going on over there, the Islamic State, we're seeing every nation today around Israel is Islamic. We're seeing the growth. They think this is their time. They've 1.7 billion, 1 in 4 people, quarter of the world population. Allah has put wealth underneath their feet and underneath the sand, the oil, And we keep buying the oil. We keep making them wealthy, and that's another story. So they're using it. They think their time has now come to bring it. Now, you got your Shiites and your Sunnis, and they're always fighting each other. And there's a different view of how the Dajjal, or rather how the Mahdi will come about. The Shiites believe that there must be a war already with Israel, and that's what brings about the Mahdi to come. Ahmadinejad, you know, the former president of Iran, he thought that was his calling, to bring about that war in order for the Mahdi to come. The Sunni Muslim believes, no, the Mahdi comes and he starts the war. He initiates it. And so there's a little debate on that. But basically, the war is with Israel and the destruction of that. And what we're seeing going on in the Middle East today with our current president and, you know, the pieces of the chessboard are beginning to be finding their place. We're going to see a war soon.
Is Barack Obama a Muslim?
Well, you know, I've said for years he's a closet Muslim. He has never renounced his faith in Islam. Now, boy, we get a lot of people who'll call me and say, "You idiot!" You know, he gave his testimony being a Christian, but he's also told Muslims that he's a Muslim. We have evidence of that. We document that on our radio program, on our website. But also, too, I think one of the most condemning evidence was said by Jeremiah Wright himself just 2-3 years ago now. Ed Klein interviewed him for his book, The Amateur. Ed Klein gave him a 2-hour interview. Mm-hmm. It's all recorded. It's on tape. And Ed Klein, got into that conversation with Jeremiah Wright. Jeremiah Wright, said, you know, Obama came to him one day, said he was confused about his spiritual identity. And I'm going to quote as verbatim as I can. He said, well, we know that you have your Islamic background. We know you have that. What you need now is some coaching on Christianity.
Hmm.
And so Ed Klein says, so did you convert him from a Muslim to a Christian? Here's what he said. Well, I wouldn't go that far to say that.
Jeremiah Wright.
Jeremiah Wright said that. But what I can say is that I made it easy for him to accept Christianity without leaving his Islamic background.
Wow.
And you need to understand the teaching.
That's a part of Islam. They will allow that as long as they don't denounce.
Yeah, as long as they never renounce Islam. They're still Muslim,
yeah.
And they must publicly renounce it. If they don't, in the eyes of Islam, they're still Muslim. And so what's going on? Some Christian missionaries and some teachers of Chrislam blending these religions together. Jeremiah Wright is one of the famous, biggest preachers of Chrislam in our nation today.
Mm-hmm.
I have friends who posed as Muslims, asked to see if they could join their church.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, yes, we have no problems with that. We have many Muslims members of our church.
Wow.
And because they teach, you know, we're not asking you to leave Allah. We're not asking you to leave Islam. We already see Jesus as a prophet. We just want you to come halfway across the bridge and accept him as your savior. And that they're not leaving Islam. That's not salvation, friends.
Well, it is not. And so, you know, it could very well be that what we see in Islam is working up to be the at least a part of the one world religion in the last days.
Yes, we see the joining of two world faiths, Chrislam, and now we're seeing Judaism coming in through other sources as well.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us today. The Lord willing, we will be back with you tomorrow on another edition of Stand in the Gap Today. For Dave Kistler and Sam Rohr, I'm Gary Dahl saying keep looking up. We know the best is yet to come. God bless you all.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to Stand in the Gap Today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler. Brought to you by the American Pastors Network. Every day on this station, we address the most urgent issues undermining the culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. APN takes seriously the command to be salt and light in this culture. Our mission is to declare truth into the public square, bringing a biblical worldview to the issues of the day. We seek to build a dynamic network of pastors across the nation who hold firmly to the authority of Scripture and boldly preach the whole counsel of God. This ministry is supported through the prayers and financial support of people like you, and we urge you to do all you can to help the American Pastors Network accomplish this mission. To learn more, visit www.AmericanPastorsNetwork.net and help us with your donation today. Find out how we're impacting the culture and how you can join in the mission. Join us again tomorrow for Stand in the Gap Today.